This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Feline lovers, welcome to Catitude. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. My guest today is, she's actually in the studio, but visiting from far away. You know, even down under, they care about feline nutrition. It is so important. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Michelle Fern here, and you know saving cats is near and dear to my heart. Did you know that there is an estimated 70 to 100 million free-roaming cats in the United States? And without spay-neuter, that number will keep growing. Not only does spay-neuter mainly reduce the community cat population, but it also keeps cats healthier. Scooter, the neutered cat, is on a mission to give cats an extra life by making it hip to be snipped. Visit his website, givethem10.org, to help pioneer a better world for cats. That's givethem10, spelled out, T-E-N.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome Dr. Josie Golan. She is a veterinarian from Australia. Welcome, Dr. Josie.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. Is it okay if I call you Dr. Josie?
Oh, absolutely. And even just Josie is fine. Whatever.
Okay. Can you share a little bit about your background? Actually, you know, before you start, we're based in the U.S. Your accent is so lovely. You could just talk anything and we'd be mesmerized, I think. But you have an amazing background. So can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a vet for about 15 years now, and I'm from Sydney, Australia, and that's where I'm working at the moment. I used to be an equine vet, so a horse vet, and then I switched over to general practice for our companion animals, so cats and dogs, for about the last 12 or so years. And I still do horse work on the side as well. So I would say I am absolutely passionate about the power and the role of nutrition in helping animals thrive. So I also have my master's in human nutrition. So you can probably tell I'm a little bit obsessed with it all. But it's so cool to me that, you know, what we put in our pets' bodies is so important for their longevity and health span. And there's so many things in the environment that we can't control, but food is something we can control, and it has so much impact when we get it right. So I do all sorts of medicine with companion animals, but I really love to focus on nutrition and good nutrition to help them not just survive, but really thrive.
Well, we're really excited to have you here. I've had talked to people from other countries. I've been grateful that I've had the opportunity to do so with Catitude and with Pet Life Radio. And I have heard over and over again that people talk about regulations for pet food in the U.S. are not as strict as in other countries. So, for example, pet food claims are more regulated in your country, in Australia, than the U.S. And I've heard this before in other places in Europe. Why do you think that is? What are we getting wrong? We won't even talk politics because we're recording October 1st in 2024. So we won't talk about what's going wrong with our politics and all that craziness, which is, I'm sure, the rest of the country is providing entertainment. But let's talk about why pet food claims are not as regulated.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting one, and it makes it really tricky for pet parents and, you know, pet food consumers, as in like the people that purchase the pet food, not that people are eating pet food, but it makes it really hard for people to navigate pet food labels when there isn't sort of universal stringent policies. So in Australia, we have more guidelines in terms of those policies, but they can be enforced by certain regulatory bodies. So it means that there are sort of strict regulations around what is written on pet food and around the labeling. And it's to do with sort of biosecurity concerns, sort of the regulatory oversight, and just a generally higher standard of nutritional labeling. And a lot of it is to do with a strong focus on food safety overall, but it, in terms of with human food safety and also extending into pet food safety and sort of ethical sourcing and monitoring of the animals that go into the food products. So I know, like, I'm quite familiar with New Zealand as well, and they are similar. They're probably even more stringent. They're overseen by the Ministry for Primary Industries, which oversees human and animal food. And again, it's due to these sort of biosecurity rules and food safety, and it includes pet food to protect that sort of agricultural sector and also public health. Whereas I think for the US, as my understanding is, it's also follows, I guess, guidelines as opposed to stringent rules in terms of animal product labeling, like food labeling. But the problem is, between the states, I think there's a lot of variability in terms of enforcement. And I think the market as a whole is probably a little bit more commercially driven, with looser regulations, I guess, and I guess that less consistent oversight for pet food claims. So it does make it tricky for the consumer when they're trying to decipher, you know, what is good food and what isn't, when it's not a universal stipulation for how we label our pet food.
I think it makes it especially harder because these days, I know that this is the trend, at least in the US, it's going toward more raw food, fresh food, and quality food. But then again, like you said, the regulations are not there. What about nutrition for your cat? Because with the trends of fresh food and raw food, there's also been human trends like vegan and plant only and raw and these kind of diets. And I've talked about this a lot on Catitude, but it really is, it pushes my buttons. These kind of diets for cats can be just fatal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I've talked about, sorry for my listeners, sorry to cut you off, Dr. Josie. My listeners, I've talked about this a lot, but I keep hearing people saying, you know, I'm vegan. I want my cat to be vegan. We cannot do that.
Absolutely not. I want you to repeat after me, everyone listening, to repeat after me. Cats are obligate carnivores. They must have a meat that is largely or, you know, completely comprised of animal tissue. So this is muscle, organ, connective tissue, bones. That is what they need in order to survive and thrive. If you feed your cat a plant food diet, so a vegan diet, they will not survive. It is not possible. And look, I am not hating on plant food eaters. I am one myself. I eat a whole food plant-based diet. I think that is an excellent diet for a human, or a whole food, you know, plant predominant diet, excellent diet for a human, not appropriate for the feline species. So we really need to recognize, we tend to sort of have these shifts in pet food nutrition where we can get a little bit caught up with human trends and we sort of transpose them onto the animal world, and they are simply not appropriate. We need to recognize species-specific nutrition. And even if we just sort of think about it and break it down really clearly, if we think about the anatomy and the biology of the cat, it's got a short gastrointestinal system, which is designed to digest meat and, you know, animal tissue. It breaks it down quickly and then eliminates the waste very quickly, as opposed to us, which we have a much longer gastrointestinal system to help us break down plant material. The cats also have strong stomach acid, so they're going to break down that meat really quickly. And they have essential amino acids that they can only find in animal tissue. So there is absolutely no case for feeding a cat a plant-based diet. I completely agree with your strong stance on this, and I want to make it really clear to any listeners out there that it is a bad move to do that to your cat, and you will do harm.
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. And I'm sure the listeners will feel validated if they were pressured at all into, you know, I'm vegan, my cat should be vegan. I know that it's not especially good. We're all about cats, but some of us have dogs too. I know it's not especially good for dogs, but a dog will survive. A cat will not.
Exactly. Yeah. So a dog is, you know, sort of more classed as a facultative carnivore. So it can digest that. They have, especially our domesticated dogs, they have sort of evolved to be able to digest and utilize carbohydrates somewhat compared to the cat. So a dog would survive, but I would definitely question, you know, whether it would thrive, which is what I'm interested in. And I know what, you know, pet parents are interested in.
Thank you. What about superfoods for cats? I was doing some of my own research and I found out that dandelions and cranberries are good for cats.
Yeah. They can be. Superfoods are a tricky one because we don't always understand the dosing, and also that we need to be very careful because, you know, there is such a thing as too much of a good thing, and we can have negative impacts by sort of overdoing it. So dandelions can be good for liver health in cats, and cranberries are very, like, they have a huge amount of antioxidants in them, and they can have urinary tract benefits. But again, we can overdo it. So I typically don't recommend just supplementing your cat's food with sort of a more random array of superfoods. But what I do generally recommend is an omega-3 supplementation for cats. My favorite source of this is the New Zealand greenlit mussels. So these little shellfish native to the coastal waters of New Zealand, and they have this uniquely high EPA and DHA profile, which are the omega-3 fatty acids, and they are just unreal for a huge array of body functions. So joint health, skin health, brain, heart, eye, and immune function. They're really almost like a one-stop shop for superfoods, in my opinion. And they really pack a punch as they're also high in protein. So if you want to do something, that would be my recommendation. And you can get foods that actually have them in them. So you're not having to go and source your greenlit mussels yourself. You can actually get food products that have these as an ingredient.
Okay, thank you. Let's think about our cats at home and their diet. There's so many different things being thrown at pet parents out there. So what should pet parents consider when selecting food for their feline? Because these days, and we're going to talk about raw, so let's just talk, we'll talk about raw after the break, but just in general, what should they think about for food for their felines?
Yeah, so in general, what I think the most important thing is when you're looking at the packet, turn it over and have a look at the ingredients. The food that you are buying is only as good as the quality of ingredients and the appropriateness of those ingredients that's in the packet, that's in the actual food. So when you're reading a food label, you want to look at those first, I guess, maybe 6 to 8 ingredients, because the way food labeling works is that the largest ingredient in terms of weight or quantity in the food is labeled first, and it goes down in a descending order. So those first sort of 6 to 8 ingredients are really important. And then what I really like to look for in a food label is that you can actually identify those ingredients. So a lot of cat foods and pet foods have either meat or meat byproduct as an ingredient, and you don't really know what source of animal that is from or what body part that is from. So what I like to see is a food product that will say, you know, beef, next ingredient, beef tripe, beef liver, beef heart, you know, and so on. And then work our way down to those added minerals and vitamins that are fortifying the food, or any, you know, added ingredient like your greenlit mussels, things like that. So making sure you have whole food ingredients that you can identify ensures that those quality ingredients are going into your cat's food. The other thing that is really important is making sure that the food has that AFCO guideline stipulation, that it's meeting that standard. And that's the guidelines that are actually universal. It's the Association of American Feed Controls Officials that put out this guideline to sort of stipulate the bare minimums of nutrient requirements for particular life stages of your cat or your pet. So making sure your food says that it meets those guidelines is really important to avoid nutrient deficiencies, and also making sure it's appropriate for your cat's life stage. So some will say, you know, for growth, that's what you want for your kitten. Some will say for maintenance, and that is for an adult cat. And then you might have your more geriatric or aged cats. Some actually you can feed the whole life, and they'll say appropriate for all life stages. So ingredients, making sure you meet the AFCO requirements or guidelines. And then the most, I guess, important thing, because no food is useful if your cat won't eat it. And we know they can be finicky. So making sure that you think about the flavor and texture of the food for your cat's preferences. So cats are super textural animals. So thinking about that when you're purchasing the food or trying a new food might set you up for a little bit more success with your cat.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Pet Greens is proud to support Catitude on Pet Life Radio. Our small family farm produces live organic cat grass, catnip, and soft chew treats packed with green nutrition to help your pets truly thrive inside. We're partnering with pioneer cat behavior expert and best-selling author Pam Johnson Bennett to help indoor cats live their best lives with indoor enrichment tips for their parents.
Anyone who knows me knows I am a very strong proponent for cats being indoors. But when we bring cats indoors, where I feel it's safest, we have an obligation to make sure they have a fulfilling life, that they get enrichment. And part of that enrichment is encouraging health. And a big part of that health is cat grass. Cat grass helps with the prevention of hairballs. It can help keep your cat away from houseplants. It's also fun for your cat. It's a natural behavior that your cat wants to chew, and you know that you're providing it in a safe way.
For more information on the benefits of cat grass and catnip for your cat's indoor enrichment, visit petgreens.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Dr. Josie Golan, and we're talking about feline nutrition. So this is one that I have a pet peeve with, that there's a trend toward feeding your feline, and for those that also have canines, a raw diet. And it's really popular among cat pet parents because, you know, cats are natural born hunters and they're not as domesticated as dogs. So we always think they like to kill things so that, you know, oh, that goes hand in hand with a raw diet. Why is a raw diet not good? And are there any positives about a raw diet?
Yeah, look, I think it's a tricky one to generalize on. So I think to answer this well, we have to sort of tease apart what we consider raw and what we're talking about when people want to feed their cats just a raw diet. So what I don't think is a good idea, and where most vets sort of stand on this is, and where we can run into trouble, is feeding sort of a home-prepared raw diet. And that can be challenging and you can run into trouble because you can end up with nutritional imbalances. There is a lot of nuance in terms of cat food and cat diets. And because if you think about it, we sort of feed our cats roughly the same thing or some slight variation of the same thing every day. So if you're formulating this at home, it's really easy to end up with nutritional imbalances that can be detrimental to your cat. The other thing that we need to be mindful of, particularly with these raw food diets, is that there is potential for foodborne pathogens. So things like Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria. Now, importantly, cats are actually much more tolerant of these bugs than we are, for example. So they can eat raw food. But again, when you're cooking it at home, you increase the risk of this and also potential risk to other people in the home. So there can be some cross-contamination there. And then finally, with a lot of like home cooked raw or not, then it's not cooked, sorry, because it's raw, but home prepared raw diets, we need to be mindful of larger bone fragments. So these are the can cause gastrointestinal injury. Again, cats can eat bone, they can digest bone, but if they're large fragments, they can cause blockage, injury, and we want to avoid that. So from a home prepared raw diet point of view, I would actually say and sort of counsel against that. And I would counsel my clients with their pets against that. However, I am not against a commercial, good quality raw food diet that is balanced and comes from a reputable company that uses high quality ingredients and that also, I guess, rigorously test foodborne pathogens and would use a, say, ground bone component over bone fragments. So I think separating them is really important when we're talking about it and not lumping it all together, because there can actually be some real benefits to feeding a raw food diet. So yes, it closely mimics the wild diet, and that's not about cats, in my opinion, you know, going out and hunting for their food, but it more aligns with what they are designed to digest, and though raw food is often a highly digestible and easily digestible protein source and contains all those essential nutrients that can be degraded with any cooking and processing. It also, if they're a good quality food, they can have high quality fats in there and they are really good for your skin and coat, and also better hydration because they tend to maintain or retain the water content of the food compared to like a traditional kibble, for example. And then the other thing I think is a really interesting one to think about is that your cat's preference. So a lot of cats preferentially prefer like a raw meat or raw diet. So that to me is really important in terms of, is your cat going to eat the food as well?
Thank you for explaining that, because one of the problem I have with raw food diets is the fact that there's bacteria. But you're right, if you get it good quality raw food, much less likely to have that issue. Slim to none, let's say. So why do cats prefer raw food? Pickier eaters might prefer raw food. Is it the smell to them that's better?
I think it can be smell, it can be texture as well. And then a lot of the, particularly if it is at like at room temperature too, they tend to prefer it as well. So it is, I guess it's really hard because we can't ask them. This is all sort of inferred information as to why they prefer it. But, and look, every cat is very individual. As you would know, you know, you've got cats. Some cats prefer, you know, more textural, more crunchy food. Other cats that more sort of gelatinous or wet food. But we do see that cats that are offered a raw food, like or raw meat, that they often will eat that preferentially.
That's interesting. Let's talk about the amount of feedings per day. What is the ideal amount of feedings for your cat?
It's tricky. I would say, as a general rule, I like feeding twice a day. And I try to encourage owners to limit that sort of grazing, like having food out all day. Obviously, if you're feeding a raw food diet, you definitely do not want to leave that out all day because it can increase the pathogen load. But for people that are feeding more kibble, yeah, if we put that out all day, it can increase the chance that your cat is going to be overweight, just, you know, having food available. So I do like twice a day feeding. It also allows you to sort of really monitor how much your cat is eating and notice if it's going up or down, because obviously reduced food intake can be an early sign of a disease process that, you know, you should be going and having a trip and a talk to your veterinarian. So twice a day is my usual recommendation. And then in terms of amount, it's super variable. It totally depends on your cat's life stage. You know, if they are kitten, they're growing, they're adult, they're geriatric or older, their breed, the activity level, whether they're indoor, outdoor, their current weight status. Obviously, if you're trying to lose a little bit of weight or you want them to gain a little bit of weight. And then, of course, there's, you know, the type of food that you're actually feeding, because all different food has different energy content in it. So it sounds incredibly unprofessional when I say this and I tell my clients this, but the best guide is actually, if you're feeding a commercial food, have a look at the back of the packet. They will give you a feeding guide, usually per day, that then you would split into two amounts. And then you have a look at your cat's weight. And you really, if your cat's a little bit overweight, you probably want to be feeding the amount recommended for your cat's ideal weight. So, you know, if you have a 5 kilo or like, please excuse my crude math, we'll call it 10-pound cat, and you're aiming for like a 4 kilo cat or an 8-pound cat, then you want to feed to the guideline of a 4 or, you know, kilo or 10 or 8-pound cat. So I've probably confused everyone there with that. But you want to feed to the ideal body weight of your cat. And again, remembering those nutritional guidelines on the back are not gospel. You can vary them. There are individual variabilities within all cats. So you really need to have a good idea of your cat's weight and what you're aiming for or wanting to maintain, and then just adjust a little bit accordingly.
Okay, what about grazing? Because you mentioned leaving out the kibble. You know, I have a problem with my partner because he likes to leave out the kibble. I say no. You know, they don't need to have snacking time. They're indoor cats and they're not kittens. I lose.
It's hard. It is hard. when there's two captains of the ship, it's challenge.
Yes. So I just say, go for it. You got it. It's one of those battles I'm not going to win.
Yeah. Pick your battles, right? So look, I think it is challenging because it totally depends on your cat. And particularly in a multi-cat household, I would say it's not a good idea, because most likely you're going to have, you know, one or two cats that are a little bit more food driven and potentially, you know, have a slightly slower metabolic rate and don't need quite that much food. And from what I see clinically, we very much have a problem, just like in people, with overweight and obesity in cats, more so than we do with underfed or undernourished cats in the home. So leaving it out.
That's exactly right, because two of the cats are really fat and one just looks like he's our Maine Coon, so he's fluffy. Yeah. He just looks like he's big, but he's not that big. It's all fluff.
It's really hard with multiple cats, because you do want to be ideally tailoring to each cat, but you know, that's not always the reality within the home. So I say, as a general rule, you're better off completely eliminating the grazing during the day, particularly for multi-cat households.
I like that. Thank you. Thank you for that.
You can now take this home. You can take this argument home now. Maybe you can.
Okay. Even though I'm Catitude, we're not a product show. We do sometimes like to talk about brands, especially when I'm talking to a veterinary doctor. I'd love to know what brands they recommend. What do you recommend for your cat?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because I think with food, you need to consider, when I'm talking about a brand, I'm talking about for, you know, a healthy cat. From a veterinary point of view, we definitely have foods that are appropriate for certain medical conditions. But as for a brand as a whole, I love Feline Natural, which is a New Zealand food brand, which is why I'm sort of across what goes on with the New Zealand food labeling that we talked about a little bit earlier. So I have worked with this brand for, you know, the last 7 or so years. So it's a fantastic food for cats, and it's one that I do actually stock in my clinic as well in Australia. And so what they sort of focus on is more of a high meat diet, which I think is aligned to what a cat biologically should be eating. So the beauty of their products as well is that they do use these grass-fed meats. So it's all from the human food supply chain, and they're grass-fed, free-range and sustainably sourced products. So you know that the ingredients going in, they're all from New Zealand. The ingredients going in mean that the output of the food is excellent quality. And the food is also, it's free of fillers, GMOs, grains, and they meet all those AFCO requirements that we talked about earlier. So they have an in-house nutritionist, and they formulate their diets in conjunction with Massey Uni. So that's a university in New Zealand. Interestingly, like we talked about before, so these guys do focus on more of that raw food component, but they have a range of products, I should say. And what they do is a freeze-dried product, which is really cool, because it reduces that water content in the food. It's sort of like snap freezing all the nutrients in, but taking out the water content to below a level where pathogens can grow. So really making sure that food safety parameter is there. And then they batch test rigorously all their food for those foodborne pathogens with an in-house microbiologist. They retain samples for their batches when they go to market. So you really know that that food safety component is taken super seriously. And then for those that aren't so keen on that raw component, they also have a more sterilized version, which is, I guess, a tinned or in the pouches for ease of administration into the food bowl. And they also offer for people that aren't quite there yet, or maybe just want to add a little addition, or say like a topper onto their food that they already feed their cat for like a nutritional boost. They have freeze-dried treats and then cool little toppers from a product called Green Tripe, which is the stomach lining of a ruminant animal, so either a sheep or a cow. So some really innovative sort of science-led, but sort of inspired, I guess, by nature, really cool food coming out of New Zealand. So I love them as a product, and I don't sadly have a cat in my life at the moment. My husband is a bit anti-cats in the house, so he's threatened divorce. So I'm naturally still weighing up my options as to whether or not it's worth that to get a cat. But I have a dog, and I feed my dog the canine version of this brand. So he's been on that his whole life, and he is perfect in my opinion. Some might beg to differ, but yeah, he's awesome.
I'm sure he is. Feline Natural is available globally, I'm sure, right?
Yes, yes. So they're a global product, and it's definitely available in the US and around the world.
Josie, what is the best way to change your cat's food? I've heard there's two ways, either sudden, just switch, or gradual.
Yeah, I'm a fan definitely of the gradual. I think you are more likely for success with gradual. So just changing that sort of ratio very slowly, introducing it, and then seeing how you go. But they can be picky. So it's always a risk changing the food. But certainly I find doing it gradually gets a better response typically.
Okay. And you have been a wealth of information. And I know all my cat lovers out there are saying, where can we find out even more? So at the Feline Natural website, there's also a blog full of information that and lots that you have contributed to. Can you tell us briefly about that and then share the site?
Yeah, so it is exactly as you say. On the Feline Natural website, they've got a whole blog sort of page where there's a wealth of information about feline nutrition and other tips and tricks in terms of cat ownership and pet parenting. So I've written and contributed to a lot of them and, yeah, full of tips and tricks about how to best feed your cat or things to look out for and how to make sure your cat is happy and healthy for their life. Yeah, so if you want to look up the website, if you're in the US, the best website is us.felinenatural.com. But if you're in any other country, you can just look up Feline Natural and the website will direct you to your country's version of it. So a wealth of information there for people to learn more about their cats.
Dr. Josie, I want to thank you so much for coming on Catitude. I so appreciate your time. And I am sure my listening audience is loving all of this wonderful information.
Amazing. Thanks so much for having me, Michelle. It's been awesome.
I hope you all enjoyed the show. I loved speaking to Dr. Josie Golan. Be sure to check out Feline Natural. It's us.felinenatural.com. There is a lot of great information for your cats, and the food is amazing. Thank you to my cat crew that tested it. Thank you, Dennis, Charlotte, and Molly. And thanks so much to my Catitude listening audience. I so appreciate you and your loyalty. Thank you so much. Thanks again to my guest, Dr. Josie Golan. And the show would not be the same without the magic of my producer, Mark Winter. Thank you, Mark, for all you do. And remember, lose the attitude, have catitude.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.